Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. We have survived February 14th, for better or for worse. The snow goddess continues to share her bounty with us, but the coldest of our days might be behind us as we creep towards spring. Today we bring you two Desert Oracle Radio episodes. Ken Lane is pondering all the great deserts, and then one in particular, in the show he released February 12th, 2021. Here is Alien Corpses of the Great Basin.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. But which desert? Well, all of them in the Americas. The deserts run up the western spine of these twin continents, North and South America. Tall walls of mountains on the boundary of the great plates that make up the surface of our haunted planet. From Antarctica and the Andes through Central America and up the narrow spine of Baja California, northward through the Sierra Nevada, the Rockies, the Cascades, the coast ranges of Vancouver to the Yukon, the Brooks Range, the Alaska Range, the whole eastern edge of the Ring of Fire, the Cordillera of the Americas. When the mountains are tall enough, they catch up the clouds and the rain and the snow in their jagged peaks, starving the land beyond of water. And what we get in return is the desert, nature in the minimalist form, perfect and sublime in its scarcity of plant life, its strangeness of animal life. The Great Basin Desert starts on the violent eastern slopes of the Sierra Nevada, north of the Mojave, and then it stretches across the entire width of Nevada and half of Utah. The loneliest road in America is U.S. Highway 50. It runs right through the middle. It never feels that lonely to me. For example, it has plenty of highway patrolmen. One of these guys was parked up on a dirt ridge outside of Austin, Nevada. And sure enough, I rolled past, arguably within the speed limit, and he turned on all 500 lights and came chasing after me. My crime? Well, I'd bought a vehicle, still had the dealer plates, which, by the way, officer, are legal for driving. That's sort of the point. But this old boy was bored, sitting up there on the dirt pile, probably daydreaming about a new camouflage hoodie five sizes too big. And he pulls me over and takes about 5 minutes to sputter out what the problem might be. His problem, I mean. I had no problems at all on that glorious winter day. You see, the entire vehicle was filled with matching cardboard boxes. And every one had a label that read Desert Oracle Spring 2015. The first issue. And like Johnny Appleseed before me, I was traveling the land, dispersing the fruits of my labors. Or the seeds, I guess, in this comparison. Well, the trooper fooled around in his car for a while, even though my name was on the registration, same as on my driver's license, all in good order. And I really should have just thrown it into reverse and rear-ended him while he was sitting there playing with a cop computer. That would have woken him up. But back then, even just 6 years ago, I still had a bad habit of trying to accommodate malicious people, especially when they had me trapped. So I just sat there, and when he comes back, he wants to chat. I said, "Buddy, I got a lot of ground to cover. I'm working." Well, he wants to know what I do for work and etc. Real detective there, not noticing the entire vehicle was filled with identical boxes that maybe the driver wanted to take somewhere. So I tell him, tersely, that I publish a desert magazine about the folklore and history of our arid lands. And I gotta get. Well, what a coincidence. He also works at the local history museum in the next town, and etc. And because his museum is not actually open for business, well, I'm free to go on my way. I give him a handful of copies of the first issue and say, "Peace be upon you," and off I go. Where I was headed, now, that was a bit of a mystery. Because so far, this inaugural voyage to spread the good news was not going so great. I did not expect candy and flowers, as the Pentagon used to tell those poor, deluded 911 recruits to expect in Iraq. But I had not foreseen the sheer determination of bookshop and gift store employees and managers to out of hand reject a free stack of handsome little magazines that they were free to either sell and keep the proceeds from, or just dump in the recycling. I even included a birch display stand engraved, which I figured might entice a manager or owners. They could easily reverse the stand and use it for something else. Anyway, it was day 3 or 4, and I had no takers anywhere. Not in the big towns like Reno, not in the small towns that were mostly still all closed up and abandoned. This being the long tail of the Great Recession. Online gambling and the general lack of work and money for working people who needed money had led to the closure of most little casinos and hotels and restaurants and cocktail lounges along all the lonely little roads that crisscross the vast basin and range landscape of the Great Basin Desert. I drove another several hours just thinking it all over. I thought of Harlan Sanders driving his rundown car across the country, trying to convince roadside diners to buy his fried chicken technique, sleeping in his car and living off $100 a month at 65 years old. His whole life in shambles. I'd been to Ely a few times, Ely, Nevada, and I had appreciated the place, but this time it was dead as a morgue, windswept and gloomy. Nothing was open but a mini market and a gas station with a couple of slot machines ringing and dinging over by the beef jerky and the potato chips. When I found a rock shop or a chamber of commerce or a real estate office, I scrawled out some greetings on Desert Oracle letterhead and wrapped the note around the couple of issues I could manage to stuff through the mail slots, where it fell in a pile of old penny savers. Everything was closed. Now, you live in a little desert town, you know, certain things are closed on certain days. The gift shops are usually closed midweek, restaurants on Mondays or Tuesdays, etc. But there was nothing open anywhere day after day. That's the point of living in the middle of nowhere, I guess. You don't need anything open too much. Go down and get a steak dinner once a week, senior special, check the P.O. box. Maybe drop by for Sunday services at the one little church that somehow managed to stay in business when all the rest went belly up. Drive 2 hours to the farm machinery chain store that drove away your local tractor shop. Get some parts for the alfalfa irrigation system. Hard at work or hardly working. And at night, glancing out into the darkness that covers your couple of 100 acres that you could not sell if you wanted, well, maybe your attention is drawn to those strange, pulsing red lights over the northeast quadrant, where the cattle like to bunch up and sleep together on cold, windy winter nights. Jiminy Christmas, not again. Not again with all that. Ely, Nevada, and the surrounding ranches and dot-on-the-map communities, well, it's one of the world's hotspots for strange lights doing their strange and silent low-altitude maneuvers along basin and range. Read you a couple of reports. September 22, 2019. Four or five bright lights moving south through the valley disappeared and reappeared. My wife and several friends and I were driving west on Highway 6, about 8 miles outside of Ely. Wife noticed four to five bright orange lights in a line moving south. So I took out my phone and started to record the lights. They seemed to break up or fall down at an angle and disappear, only to reappear several miles away down the valley. This continued until we could no longer make them out due to the distance. July 14, 2015. A UFO followed us while driving in Nevada a few nights ago. While driving a dark road going from Wells to Ely at night, I saw a light appear behind me. I thought it was a car. Then all three of us saw the light coming closer, then moving from the street to the open country at its left. The light was still pointing at us, but it was moving right to left, like it wasn't touching the highway. A truck got between us and the light, and it took off like it was flying. The truck turned off, and then we saw three lights on the desert to our left. Two lights switched off and the remaining one returned to the highway, weaving on the road. A perfectly straight stretch of road. Suddenly, it got really close to us, and when another car passed from the opposite direction, the light switched off, and the object was hit by the other car's headlights. I could see a cone-shaped disc behind us, dark violet, black in color, as wide as the opposite lane. Once we neared Ely, the light disappeared for good. Channel 2 in Reno did a special report back in the year 2000, interviewing MUFON's Mark Easter about a UFO flap happening around Ely at the time. Orbs dancing around cottonwood trees, triangular lights zigzagging over the open desert, that sort of thing. And way back in 1952, something very strange was said to occur just outside of Ely. July 7 or August 15, take your pick. According to one version, lacking as usual in newspaper sources or specific locations or documentation, the crash occurred in August. On the town of Ely's website, we found this curious bit of folklore that's about the most detailed account you'll find. One sighting in particular has attracted a fair amount of attention because it allegedly included the recovery of 16 alien bodies. They were killed in a crash landing. That's a higher body count than any other UFO event anywhere. It happened in 1952 near the town of Ruth, which lies just east of Ely. The exact date is in dispute. Most online accounts recorded as August 12, although UFO researcher Jeremy Meador thinks it may have happened in 1953. According to the accounts, between 9 and 10 p.m., a UFO crashed into the side of the mining pit at the Robinson Copper Mine, adjacent to Ruth. The crash was witnessed by a number of mine employees who described a purple, oval-shaped, glowing object laying on the embankment. It was intact, not broken up. The usual mysterious military truck showed up and hauled it away. It was the summer the flying saucers had returned in force, if they'd ever gone away. In July, the U.S. Capitol was invaded not by a human mob, but by mysterious fast-moving craft that made sport of the jets sent in pursuit. The craft danced right over the White House and the Capitol Dome. The UFO cultists and flying saucer authors were as busy as they'd been back in the first year of the hysteria, 1947. Depending on which pulp paperback you picked up from that time, flying saucers full of little space pilots were crashing more often than Teslas, just falling out of the sky all over the place. This was the time of the Flatwoods Monster in Braxton County, West Virginia. In the convincing report by two Air Force colonels, John L. McGinn and John R. Barton, who witnessed a formation of three Delta Wing mystery craft over the Carson Sink, closer to our area of concern in northern Nevada. The unidentified trio buzzed the colonels as they were being transported by B-25 from Hamilton Field in Marin County to Colorado Springs on the sunny afternoon of July 24, 1952. There is some documentary evidence for the Ely incident, whatever it really was. It comes from the newspaper in Ogden, July 8, under the headline, "Fireball Gets a New Twist, Nevada Has Blast and Blaze." Yesterday morning's mysterious fireball viewed over a vast area of Utah, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and Nevada was still just as much a mystery today. Reports varied from a green pea fireball followed by a long orange streamer to a bright orange fireball with a gaseous light blue smoke trail. People who know about meteors, including Charles Osman of Weber College and Dr. R. N. Thomas of the University of Utah, agreed it had to be awfully big. A new twist was injected this morning when W.S. Hobbs, assistant trainmaster at Montello, Nevada, for the Southern Pacific Railroad, reported that many railroaders heard a heavy explosion around 10:30 a.m. yesterday and saw a column of smoke and dust hanging in the sky. Well, Montello's about 200 miles north of Ely, so who knows? If I can drive 3 hours across Nevada for no reason at all, I guess the space buddies can crash in two places at once, a month apart. It's just hard to make anything from these reports. Nobody seemed to know what was going on, but everybody was seeing something. Meanwhile, the CIA's Robertson panel had investigated the whole phenomena, especially the Cold War nerves involved. And these learned men came to the conclusion that whatever was going on, it had more to do with poltergeists and leprechauns and Martians hot-rodding around Earth for kicks and crashing half their fleet into the desert. We believe in aliens like medieval Europeans believed in fairies. It's just something out there. We don't even know why. That's just the way things are. The educated and uneducated, young and old, around the world, we just believe in aliens. Like the fae, the fair folk, the good neighbors, the gentry. The aliens are mostly invisible, able to perform any feat, from teleportation to fornication to mind control. And they are far superior to us. We see what we expect to see, but the light still appeared dancing atop the narrow bands of mountains. Cattle and sheep are still cut up or dropped from above for reasons modern man is too nervous to contemplate. Death candles still illuminate the homes of those about to die. Ghost lights still chase truckers and road trippers down the lonesome highways. And the spiritually inclined, whatever their race or culture or background, still make their way to our many sacred mountains and plasma vortexes and other such holy or cursed window areas that dot our planet. Often in neat lines connecting ancient locations of mysterious rock art, standing stones, or holy groves and clear water streams that cure the sick. We live in a magical world, and we are part of it. If we remember. If we remember how. Well, I made it up the mountain to Great Basin National Park's Visitor Center, an hour southeast of Ely, shortly before it closed. I was the only visitor on that dark wintry day of snow flurries and ice slush on the Tulane. I got my packet of magazines and the wooden stand together, stood up straight, put on my friendly face, and walked on in. Nobody was around but one old ranger, and he had time to talk. I made my case, and while he could promise nothing, as he did not run the gift shop, the old ranger graciously accepted my stuff and pointed out that my new little magazine was the size of a greeting card. "We sell piles of greeting cards for $5 a pop," he said, shaking his head. "And there's nothing inside but a place to sign your name. You've got all these stories and pictures inside for the same price. I bet you'll sell a bunch of them." It was enough to provide some hope, hope and change, $5 and change at least, maybe. Nobody had bought one yet. I drove down the hill toward Baker and the Utah state line, and just beyond the national park boundary, something caught my eye on the side of the road. The something had eyes of its own, two large black eyes, green skin, and a big head. I pulled off into the icy muck and walked back to see this creature sitting on a rusted old kitchen chair beneath a juniper. He wore an old army jacket and gloves, and he had a beer bottle in his pocket. After taking the alien's picture, I pulled a copy of Desert Oracle from my vest pocket, and I left it in the alien's chest pocket, sticking out so you could see the yellow and the name and the top of the cactus on the cover. "Farewell, buddy," I said. As for Colonel Sanders, He finally franchised his chicken recipe to a restaurant in Utah, South Salt Lake. That was the first one, the first KFC. And it was in Utah, down in Moab, that I finally got a bookstore to take the Desert Oracle. Back of Beyond is called. The first shop to take them. God bless them. Eventually, I made my way back down to Joshua Tree, where to my surprise, a couple of little shops had opened right there. In my run-down, unloved stretch of abandoned gas stations and dirty-floored liquor stores and junkyards, in the year I'd spent wandering around the West and working on the first issue, something strange had happened. People had started to come from all over the world, right here to Joshua Tree, the only affordable weekend spot in Southern California. Is Isaacs, and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, KCDZ, 107.7 FM, Friday nights at 10 p.m., and at various times on our makeshift network of participating community radio stations from coast to coast. Wherever you are, we are on your podcast player. We're always at Desert Oracle Radio. The soundscapes on tonight's show were composed and performed by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Thanks to our friends who support the show on Patreon. Patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Thanks for reading and subscribing to our magazine and getting our book, all the stuff. The stuff we make for your enjoyment is so that we have something to do. The weather is getting to that perfect point, so here come the tourists, I guess. Enjoy it while you can. These last quiet weeks of winter before the springtime procession, the procession of the damned. They're not really the damn. People got to get out. People need fresh air. People need to see wilderness and beauty. And we're close to a lot of people, so welcome visitors. Please pack out your beer cans and your yoga mats and your strange hats and your inappropriate shoes and all your weird little dogs you bring out here. You know, I've had a letter from Dave McAdam up in Gamma Gulch that has been sitting on top of the pile of letters and cards out of the mailbag, and I keep running out of time. And that's not going to change tonight. Sorry, Dave. I'll have to read your dirty note next week. Thank you for listening out there. Be nice to your dog, even if it's little, and not too hard on anybody else. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, at 95.9 FM. 3 years ago, as the end of February approached, Ken Lane was reflecting on our vast lands, both settled and unsettled, and he's going to give you his opinions. Here is the episode he released February 18th, 2022. He called it Settle Down with Purpose.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. week of wild weather, those cold winds coming up the mountains to remind you so clearly, winter is not yet over. The Joshua trees are beginning to show their strange cream-colored blooms, the size and shape of artichokes. The emotional call of a gamble's quail is beginning to be heard in the washes and beneath the junipers and blackbrush. The weeds are already springing up around the human habitations. So maybe we will get a good crop of wildflowers in the Mojave High Desert. But the nights remain chilly and a blast of midweek cold air arrived to admonish those of us who'd already taken the cover off the swamp cooler. You could remove every sign of human habitation from Morongo Valley to 29 Palms, and it would be a great improvement. But for a true high desert heart, nothing compares to this wild landscape. The blobs of granite boulders pushing out of the earth's crust, the tall Mojave yuccas with their perfect little curls along their long, dagger-like leaves. The California junipers, male and female, sometimes near enough to touch. The latter covered in blue-white berries that nourish bird and beast. Human, too, in the form of our beloved spirit called Jin from Geneva, French for juniper. The high desert is a riot of green over sandy soils and chocolate-colored mountains. The Mormon tea bushes, the Joshua tree's spiky leaves, mighty pinyons on the hillsides. And these are the evergreens. By this time of year, the color is so rich. The plants scoured clean of dust by our occasional winter rains. I stop sometimes, mid-walk, mid-step, and gaze in wonder at it all. One hand on the walking stick, another idle and itching to do the devil's bidding. It reaches for the phone, the camera. But I generally beat the urge. Another picture? For what? For whom? I'm here right now. All is as it is. For 15 years now, give or take a year's exile, I've called this particular place home. I first laid eyes upon this part of the world 4 decades ago, when I first fell in love with it. I've lived in other deserts over the years, the Sonoran in Arizona, the Great Basin of the Eastern Sierra, and Northern Nevada. The Colorado Desert of Anzabrego, creeping up to a mountain cabin that sheltered me so long ago. But this Mojave High Desert, has been home for the longest time. And when the last Airbnb is swept away by the cleansing sands and the last vintage shop is dust beneath a jackrabbit's long and powerful feet, the Mojave Desert will remain mostly as it stands. In 1,000 years, our paltry and ugly marks upon this land will be quaint reminders of a people who faded out, like so many before us. Love is patient, as St. Paul wrote. Circumstance took me to civilization for a while, earlier this month. And while I did not look forward to the task, I had figured I would enjoy what the metropolis had to offer. Because during the long, dull pandemic years, it has been a little too easy to imagine a life that's a little more geared to human society. The simple things, dining out with friends, wandering libraries and museums. The sublimity of a neighborhood bar in the afternoon with a good book. Going to the symphony, dropping into a dirty little club, midnight tacos from a truck outside. And while those things continue in their current lesser forms, and retain some of their charms, the world has changed for good or ill. It's been happening for a while now, I guess the past 20 years when you think about it, when you look back. The city, more than ever, is anxious and joyless and vapid place. The utter inhumanity of the massive shanty towns of people denied the very basics of life. Faceless, masked pedestrians ducking nervously from errand to errand. The empty taverns and restaurants. The unfriendly galleries and libraries. The closed gardens and hideously overpeopled outdoor trails. The ugly chain stores that are most of what survived the retail plague. The charmless little flipper shacks, gussied up in cheap vinyl flooring and already flaking paint. The vile billboards for nothing really but television shows. A reminder of what people really do in the modern city. They hide like nervous little rats. They stream those TV shows and order delivery groceries and fast food. And that's about all they do. Yet the traffic is right back to awful. The drivers seething with anxiety and rage. The dog walkers herding a half dozen panting canines in various stages of depression and misery. There is an overwhelming feel of decay. The hideous disposable architecture of the 1970s and 1980s collapsing before our eyes. The bone-rattling potholes and the navigation maps leading you through ever more remote residential streets set up like guerrilla war barricades of speed bumps, traffic circles, and threatening signs. The lively old neighborhoods of working-class Latino and black people transformed into bidding war zones of blank-faced yuppies working remotely for technology companies with gibberish names and impossible-to-describe products that don't actually exist. The gangs of sheriff's deputies with their initiation murders and prostitution rings. The big city mayor who mentally departed long ago, ready to be rewarded for his corporate political hackery with an ambassador's mansion in a totalitarian country. Of course, it was ever thus. Going back to Mesopotamia, to Imperial Rome, to Dickens' London. But there is something especially sinister today, because the blood has been drained from the body and the patient has not been informed. When there is no organic culture, no space for the divine, no commons. Well, then they just prescribe another white paper bag of prescriptions and tell you to work out your trauma. It's your problem, they tell you, and you better pay that bill quick. There are moments, of course, moments that make you feel a little bit alive. The late night street racing, the illegal dance parties, the friendly gambling rackets, housed in the remaining few mom and pop businesses. The few brave kids skateboarding down the abandoned city streets after 9 p.m. or so, with police choppers in hot pursuit. What's left of the underground, I guess. But there's a lot less of all of it. The cutting up of society's heart has been successful. As far as Amazon and Google and the institutional real estate investors and the online education apps see it. They have successfully rendered the patient helpless and impotent and barely able to complain about it. Even complaining. Even rage has been commodified as something to cure by subscription. Weekly therapy, gym memberships, yoga classes. The human flower will blossom again, but first it must germinate in the psychic muck for a while. Which is fine. I chose sides a long time ago and have no regrets. But let me tell you what I hear from people. Let me tell you why they come. Shattered and battered to places like the one I call home. If only for a weekend respite, if only for a breakdown that can't be healed with meditation apps and anxiety pills. They long for peace of mind, for freedom from the numbing notifications, for real quiet, for starry skies. They long for community, the kind that comes from knowing a dozen people well rather than 100 people not at all. They long for purpose. Well, that last one's tough. But the rest is available somewhere. Don't come here, for God's sake. This place is already done. This will be a weekend retreat for semi-wealthy people for many years to come, as long as the cities of the West Coast still have viable populations. The good news is that the population is in free fall. The people of childbearing age, not just in America, but around the world, have quit having babies. Which are, you may have forgotten, smaller versions of adults. The U.S. birth rate declined by 20% over the last 15 years, and the decline is accelerating 4% in the past year alone. There are signs everywhere if you know where to look. And the world of 2032 will be far different than the world of today. And far more different than the world of today from 2012. It may be time if you can muster the energy to seek out your place and settle down with purpose. The brilliance of the moon, a fire. The brilliance that flames from the sun. To illuminate the entire world. This brilliance is truth, is mine. Senses just as the wind carries fragrances from the places where it has traveled. Residing over the senses of hearing and sight, of touch, taste, smell, and also of mind. He savors the senses objects. I dwell deep in the hearts of all beings. I am the source of memory and knowledge. The author of all scriptures, their wisdom, their God. In demonic wounds, deluded in birth after birth, they never reach me, but sank to the lowest state. This is the soul-destroying threefold entrance to hell. Desire, anger, and greed. Everyone should avoid them. The man who refuses to enter these three gates into darkness does what is best for himself and attains the ultimate goal. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. The music pieces you heard tonight are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, with our old friend S.W. Lawden on drums for that last part, which was recorded at Muse Lighthouse while I was out there last week. I will soon have some news about the first Desert Oracle event of the year, but it's going to be a good one. Especially if you're within reach of the Holy Land, Slick Rock Country, the land of the Green River and Canyonlands and Arches. Speaking of, you can hear this radio program on Saturday nights at 9 Mountain Time in Moab and the whole Castle Valley on KZMU FM 90.1 and 106.7 on your FM dial. And of course, we are on the air Friday nights in the Mojave High Desert from Amboy to Zizix, Pioneer Town to Wonder Valley, on KZDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree. And I'm obligated to mention that our Desert Oracle Volume 1 paperback is out now at bookstores everywhere, especially in the American Southwest. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon.com for keeping us on the air. Only 4 more issues of Desert Oracle magazine will be published, coming out this year and early next. And then we're switching things around. Don't ask me for details because I haven't made them up yet. One life at a time, please. As our old friend Edward Abbey used to say. Thank you for listening. A happy desert springtime to y'all. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Well, if you're in the mood for a little parade, the Random Acts of Silliness is having their Menagerie of the Imaginary Lantern Parade, and that's going to be at the Gallatin Regional Park on February 22nd at 6:15 p.m., and they suggest that you arrive 30 minutes early to find parking and get set up, and the parade itself only lasts about 30 minutes. Anyway, enjoy if you can go. President's Day is Monday, February 17th. Ansel Adams' birthday is Thursday, February 20th. So are you celebrating any birthdays this week? Will there be cake? I don't know what their favorite cake is, but my thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to everyone that volunteers and supports KGVM, and thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams. And I'll leave it to my local birds to take us out today.